This is VOA News by remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. More than 315,000 people have died globally from COVID-19, and there are now more than 4.7 million confirmed infections. In the U.S., there are nearly 90,000 virus-related deaths and approximately 1.5 million confirmed cases. On a weekend when many pandemic-weary people emerged from weeks of lockdown, leaders in the U.S. and Europe are weighing the risk and rewards of lifting COVID-19 restrictions, knowing that a vaccine could take years to develop. In separate stark warnings, two major European leaders bluntly told their citizens that the world needs to adapt to living with the coronavirus and cannot wait to be saved by a vaccine. U.S. President Donald Trump, by contrast, promised Americans a speedy return to normalcy. That sounded far more optimistic than many experts say is realistic. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell expressed optimism that the U.S. economy can begin to recover from a devastating recession in the second half of the year, assuming the coronavirus does not erupt into a second wave. But he suggested in an interview with CBS's 60 Minutes that a full recovery will likely be possible by before the arrival of a vaccine. Powell noted that the economy was fundamentally healthy before the virus struck suddenly and forced widespread business shutdowns and tens of millions of layoffs. He said that once the breakout has been contained, the economy should be able to rebound substantially. The World Health Organization said on Sunday that children are less capable of spreading COVID-19 or are at low risk of getting ill from the disease itself. Speaking on the BBC's Andrew Marr show, WHO chief scientist Soumya Swaminathan said that there are reports of children getting admitted with a strange syndrome that causes inflammation of the blood vessels. This is VOA News. After months of feuding, Afghan President Ashraf Ghani and his rival Abdullah Abdullah signed a power-sharing agreement Sunday, a step that could smooth efforts to end the U.S.'s longest-running war. At a signing ceremony in Kabul, Afghanistan, Ghani called it a historic day, while Abdullah said that though the agreement had not been easy, a big step had been taken. Instability, quote, could have plunged Afghanistan into crisis. Abdullah had dispatched and disputed the results of an election in September and announced the formation of a parallel government earlier this year, undermining Ghani's administration at a time when the U.S. was trying to advance a peace process with the Taliban to end 19 years of war. Washington has been frustrated by the growing impasse and has announced plans to cut $1 billion in aid because the men could not agree. Shortly before the deal was signed, sources say Abdullah had wanted to control a major government portfolio like finance or foreign affairs, and that while Ghani had not agreed to this, he could offer and control the interior ministry. Officials say a lasting deal between Ghani and Abdullah is crucial to launching peace talks, as Abdullah's camp represents much of the country's northwest. The U.S. government agency that processes citizenship applications and work visas is running out of money because of the COVID-19 pandemic. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services says it needs to raise its fees and receive emergency funding from Congress to stay afloat. The agency is typically funded through fees it charges people seeking to live or work in the country, but it said Sunday that it has seen a dramatic increase, or should say decrease, in applications. It has asked Congress for $1.2 billion in emergency funding and then will add a 10% surcharge to fees to reimburse taxpayers. A jet from the Canadian Air Force's Snowbirds exhibition team crashed into a residential neighborhood in the city of Kamloops, northeast of Vancouver, Sunday after the pilot ejected. The Air Force confirmed on Twitter that one of its Snowbirds had crashed but gave no details. Local media reported at least one house was on fire in the neighborhood, and it's a city with a population of more than 90,000. Tropical Storm Arthur is crawling closer to the North Carolina coast and amid threats of some minor flooding and rough seas as the system moves off the southeast seaboard. Arthur formed Saturday off Florida, marking the sixth straight year a named storm has developed before the official June 1st start of the Atlantic hurricane season. The National Hurricane Center in Miami issued a tropical storm warning for North Carolina's Outer Banks on Sunday. By remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, May 18th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya closes its borders with Somalia and Tanzania.
Among the positive cases that have been registered in the country this last week, a total of 43 cases have recently crossed the border from neighboring Somalia and Tanzania.
The Gambia's parliament rejects government's request to extend COVID-19 lockdown. Rwanda's National Commission for the Fight Against Genocide welcomes the weekend arrest of an alleged genocide perpetrator. And a former Malawi human rights activist says the country is sitting on a time bomb as it prepares for this year's special election.
We can't go to an election with an electoral commission which is not trusted by the electoral stakeholders and is not trusted by citizens. How will citizens trust the results?
Timothy Untambo is the leader of the Citizens for Transformation movement of Malawi. And where are Sierra Leone's former Minister of Defense and two of his colleagues? Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Has closed its borders with Tanzania and Somalia due to increased number of COVID-19 cases reported at those border points. President Uhuru Kenyatta announced the closures after Kenya's Ministry of Health identified the border areas as COVID-19 high-risk areas following an increase in positive cases. As Marie Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the Tanzanian government has banned Kenyans transporting essential commodities from accessing Tanzanian territory.
The Kenya, Tanzania, and Somalia borders have been marked as the high-risk areas for the spread of COVID-19 after an analysis by Kenya's Ministry of Health. This has forced Kenya to close the 5 Tanzania and 4 Somalia cross-border points, ordering only cargo trucks carrying essential goods into the country, but under strict measures. In his state of address to the nation, President Uhuru Kenyatta said that Kenya has recorded increased number of imported cases from Tanzania and Somalia, hence need to close the borders.
We have unfortunately witnessed an increased number of imported cases among individuals crossing into the country through our borders, and these new areas have become a matter of grave concern to us. Among the positive cases that have been registered in the country this last week, a total of 43 cases have recently crossed the border from neighboring Somalia and Tanzania.
The cargo drivers who tested positive at the entry points of Kenya, Somalia, and Tanzania were denied entry to Kenya. Kenyatta said the closure of the borders of the two countries will help suppress the number of COVID-19 infections in the country.
The cessation of movement of persons and any passenger ferrying automobiles and vehicles into and out of the territory of the Republic of Kenya through the Kenya-Tanzania international border, through the Kenya-Somali international border, except for cargo vehicles, with effect from midnight tonight, the 16th May 2020.
Tanzania has ignored measures by World Health Organization in curbing COVID-19 as President John Pombe Magufuli refused to attend the East African Heads of State video conference that was meant to help member states put up measures to combat the spread of the virus. Yesterday, Sunday, Tanzania's Kilimanjaro Regional Commissioner Anna Mgwira said that Kenyan drivers transporting essential goods have been banned from Tanzania's territory as most of them were stranded at the border points, saying all goods should be left at the entry point.
A Tanzanian cargo leaving Tanzania to another country should be brought at the border. All payments will be made here at the border and then release the cargo. Goods, especially those from Kenya, will still be traded at the border. However, goods from other countries, but they are coming in through Kenya, the owner will have to look for other alternatives from respective authorities on how the goods will be received.
Yesterday, Sunday, Kenya recorded 57 more COVID-19 positive cases, bringing the total cases to 887, this being the highest number of new cases reported in a day since March 13th, when the country recorded its first COVID-19 case. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
In the Gambia, parliamentarians have rejected a request by Justice Minister Abubakar Tambadu to extend the country's national COVID-19 lockdown. The MPs over the weekend blamed the Gambian government for its failure to properly implement the lockdown. They also said the national lockdown was causing suffering in the country. As Pandere Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, Gambia's health minister, Amadou Lamy Samatta, has also warned about corruption in the health sector.
25 MPs had voted against the motion that was tabled to extend the country's national lockdown. One of them is Madi Cisse, the MP for Sarikunda West.
Extension without enforcement of regulations is only increasing hardship on our people. I will not, and I have not, and I will never ever support any extension without proper regulations. What is happening now is our market vendors are suffering. Our commuters are suffering, our religious people are suffering. I object totally to the extension because the last 45 days was not put to best use.
The Gambia has recorded 23 cases of coronavirus. 12 patients have recovered and one died. Yakuba Jaite is a nominated member of the National Assembly. She knows that in the absence of social distancing, the fight against COVID-19 would become a total failure.
The most important aspect of this fight against COVID-19 is the social distancing. And if we say the Essential Commodities Act is being implemented and the social distancing in the market is not being implemented, it all goes to vain. Because if we close the schools, our kids are not going to school, but I am going to the market and I can contract this virus from the market and come back and give it to the people I live with, it does not make sense. That is why it is very important for us to try to implement the regulations.
Justice Minister Abubakar Tambedu had spent hours over the weekend trying to convince lawmakers to grant his request for an extension of the state of emergency.
When, as a government, we are called to lead an effort that threatens us as a nation, that is the time when we put aside our political differences, come together as a country. It is what our country expects of us. And so we ask that you give us these 45 days because we think it is what we need to be able to lead the fight effectively against COVID-19 in our country.
Tambedu says the proposed extension would save lives. He warns that failure to grant his request could endanger lives.
If you do not, then you are abandoning this government at a time when it needs your help the most. And what we do as a result is we risk the unfortunate consequences for all of us and our families and our constituents for a certainty that is coming.
In another development, Health Minister Amadou Lamine Samatta has on Saturday told Parliament that there is corruption in the health sector. He says his ministry staff had compiled a bogus list of 300 COVID-19 frontline health workers who were not supposed to be paid allowances.
When we talk about these things, it is not the majority, it's just in the minority that do some of these things. The majority are hardworking, dedicated, sacrificing their lives for the people of this country. Now, that minority provided a list. In fact, when you look at the list and the estimates, it consumed almost the entire $500 million for allowances. That was the suggestion, because we wouldn't accept that.
Samatta says a similar corruption scam had occurred during Gambia's efforts to tackle the Ebola pandemic. He has accused some Gambian health workers of stealing money from that Ebola funds to build expensive houses. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The National Commission for the Fight Against Genocide in Rwanda says it welcomes the weekend arrest of Felicien Kabuga, one of the leading alleged perpetrators of the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi in Rwanda. French authorities arrested Kabuga over the weekend in Paris. Bideri Diogini is principal advisor for the commission. He says arresting Kabuga is a big achievement, and now Kabuga must answer for his alleged crimes without mitigating circumstances.
Kabuga chaired the initiative committee of the Genocide of Press, creating Radio Television de Micoline, RTLM, and Kabuga and other members of RTLM had the common objective of exterminating the Tutsi. Kabuga supported, armed, and trained the entire Hamwe militia. He has placed in his business and buildings at their disposal. Kabuga financed the genocide, His society establishment Kabuga Felicien imported tons of machete, which were distributed to the civilian population to massacre the Tutsi. And during genocide, Kabuga initiated and chaired a national defense fund aimed at collecting funds to continue arming Interahamwe militia.
Would you like for him, Felicien, to be brought back to Rwanda to be tried?
Kabuga's judgment in Rwanda would be a very good thing, a strong message for the fight against impunity. The residual mechanism that will judge Kabuga is located outside Rwanda, thousands of kilometers from the place of the commission of genocide. And the victims and witnesses are in Rwanda. And for Kabuga, it is a way of realizing that what he has done is very serious and can be asked for forgiveness.
Kabuga is 85 years old. What about forgiving and moving forward, especially as Rwanda is still celebrating the 100 days of this year, 26th commemoration of genocide?
Kabuga is old, but Kabuga was not always old. When he killed people, he was young. And even before his arrest, he never made any sign of repentance. Old age is not a criterion of regret, of requesting pardon. We know that Nazis over 90 years old are arrested and tried because the crime of genocide is imprescriptible. Kabuga must be judged and serve his sentence without mitigating circumstances. We also know that after 1994, Kabuga continued to arm genocidal group called FDLR, a terrorist movement based in the East Democratic Republic of Congo.
What message do you have for other alleged genocide perpetrators who may still be out there somewhere in the world?
Arresting Kabuga is a big achievement, but there is still a lot to do. It is first of all requesting states to cooperate judicially with the residual mechanism, and above all, to comply with the international obligations based on the 1948 Convention, Article 1, which stipulates to arrest and punish genocidal.
Bideri Diogene is the principal advisor for the National Commission for the Fight Against Genocide in Rwanda. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kigali. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, May 18th. In Malawi, the former leader of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition and now the founder of the Citizens for Transformation movement says Malawi is sitting on a time bomb and cannot go into an election with an election commission that does not have the confidence of the citizens and the courts. Timothy Untambo, who is supporting the opposition alliance, calls for the international community to intervene. During a campaign rally over the weekend, Untambo referred to himself as the commander-in-chief of the youth of Malawi.
Actually, I'm not the first leader of a movement to be called CIC. You look across other countries. I'll give you an example of Julius Malema of EFF in South Africa. He's also called commander-in-chief. Actually, our movement has been embraced by people across the country. Young people are in full support of a movement because it is carrying a transformative agenda.
You have said that this election is about change. What kind of change are you talking about?
We want to inspire young people, that young people should take the center stage of their own politics, center stage of the country's economics, center stage of the country's social life. The philosophy of our movement is people power. People power. We want to empower the people, that people should be part and parcel in defining their own destiny. We don't want people to keep complaining and crying, but they should actively participate in the building of their own country. So the future that we want to have, the change that we're talking about, is the change in all dimensions. We want jobs for young people. We want businesses for young people and for women. And we actually want to create active citizens, that citizens should not wait until things worsen, then they should rise. Citizens should always be on their toes to hold the government accountable. That's what democracy is all about in such malpractices. So we want to change. We need to put in place a government that responds to the needs of people, a government that saves the people, a government that will protect the public peace, and a government that will restore the dignity and the destiny of our country.
You made your name as leader of the Malawi Human Rights Defenders Coalition, and you championed the resignation of Elections Commission Chair Jean Ansa. What do you make of the fact that she, Jean Ansa, is still the chair of the Malawi Elections Commission?
Actually, we still maintain our position that Jean Ansa must resign. And this is the same song citizens of our country are singing. It's only Mutharika that wants Jean Ansa to be there. Probably he wants Jean Ansa to facilitate the rigging project because Jean Ansa mismanaged the elections, which was confirmed by the Constitutional Court, which was also confirmed by the Parliament, which found Jean Ansa and the rest of the commissioners incompetent. Look, Malawi is sitting on time bomb, and we call upon the international community to intervene. We can't go to an election with an electoral commission which is not trusted by the electoral stakeholders and is not trusted by citizens. How will citizens trust the results?
Timothy Untambo is the founder of the Citizens for Transformation Movement of Malawi. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. The whereabouts of Sierra Leone's former Minister of Defense and two of his colleagues are still unknown, despite calls from his attorney. Paulo Conte was arrested on March 19th and then moved after a prison riot on April 29. Amnesty International is calling on authorities in the country to disclose the former minister's whereabouts.
We have not been able to know their whereabouts. And we have made a press release. I gave a copy of the press release today to the supervising minister, that's the Minister of Internal Affairs, requesting to know the whereabouts of Paulo Conte and two others because of the fact that even though they are detainees, they have rights which the state needs to protect and promote, looking at the fair trial principles and practices, which among others is the right to a legal access to a legal practitioner. And that itself is a bit challenging because the day before yesterday, I called, I had a discussion with the lawyer who is representing Paulo and others. And he told me frustratingly that he has written twice or three times to the police requesting for access to his files so that he will have briefings to be able to adequately represent them when court resumes. But he has not been able to have such an access.
Is there concerns that they were injured on the during the prison riot on April 29th, in which two prison guards and five inmates were killed? The riot was related to a COVID-19 case at Freetown's prison.
Yes, they were relocated somewhere else after that crisis. But today we don't know where they are located. We don't really know what is happening.
And what do you think, is there a political meaning behind this, their disappearance, or is it just a kind of a lack of willpower from the authorities?
We don't know the underlying reason, but speculatively, people, they have the opinion that they want to, like, escape with these three guys who are on trial. So they want to, like, beef up security, and then that's why they don't even want to tell us their location. But we don't really know concretely. They have not really come out to tell us why they have just kept.
To be clear, too, these men are being held pre-trial detention. If yes, is that a wider issue to be addressed in Sierra Leone, the amount of people who are held in prisons, often overcrowded prisons, before even having their trial?
It is a very serious challenge, very, very serious challenge indeed, the criminal justice system. There are people, last year, there was somebody who was held up to 10 years without an indictment, until when the Human Rights Commission had to visit the prisons before they would discover him. So it's just one of a series of cases. There are a lot of cases in terms of people being held behind bars who are detained without even indictment for a couple of years or a long time. So the pretrial detention challenge is really, really huge.
That was Solomon Moses Sobhandi, director of Amnesty International in Sierra Leone. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Freetown. Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with some boxing news. Nigeria's reigning IBF European welterweight champion, Rari Ekundayo, says he's determined to host his title defense in Nigeria. Ekundayo, also known as The Natural, said despite being unable to bring his international bout to Nigeria last year, he remains undaunted in his desire to deliver one to the country soon. He said his main reason for wanting to stage the fight in Nigeria is to make boxing more popular and also inspire young boxers. In table tennis news, Africa's number two table tennis player, Ofiong Edem, is not so worried that the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games has to be postponed. The Nigerian table tennis star, who was the first table tennis player to secure a place at Tokyo 2020, says the delay is a blessing in disguise.
2021 is going to be a great year, and for me too, I think it's a blessing, you know, because it's an extra year for me to practice and to be prepared very well, because I want to make history this time. It's all about the best. If you could qualify to Olympic, it means you're good.
And now to South Africa, where the world's largest ultramarathon, the Comrades Marathon, has been cancelled. Comrade Marathon Association Chairperson Cheryl Wynne said the decision was taken after consultations between the Comrades Marathon Association and the provincial governing body, KwaZulu-Natal Athletics.
The decision, we've sort of had no alternative but to take in order to protect the future of the race, because we need, you know, you must understand that 9 months into the planning of the race, we've paid salaries, we've paid for electricity, we've paid rates.
The race was originally scheduled for June 14th, but a month ago, it was postponed to a suitable date later in the year. Some of the potential runners expressed disappointment over the postponement.
I think again, it presents itself for all the new runners and the runners that have entered Comrades to stand in solidarity and in remembrance of all of those that are experiencing COVID and are going to experience COVID.
I think at the end, it was a good decision.
What can we do if our government says so, is doing it in the best interest of the country?
The epic race, which recorded 16,702 finishes in 2019, was to be a down run this year from Pietermaritzburg to Durban over approximately 90 kilometers. And now to Kenya, where the Moi International Sports Center Kasarani in Kenya will host the World Athletics Continental Tour and the World Under 20 Championships. Nairobi Athletics Meeting, one of the eight legs in the inaugural World Athletics Continental Tour, will be held on September the 26th this year, having been postponed from May 2nd due to the novel coronavirus. The World Under 20 Championships was planned for July 7th to 12th this year, but World Athletics rescheduled it for a later date that will be decided in the course of next week. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, May 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good week.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.